do that for? Last week we talked about what it's like to lead the hardest person in the room. And the hardest person in the room, we came to the conclusion to lead is actually you. You're actually the hardest person in your world to lead. But that doesn't take away from the fact that actually there are some really difficult people in your world, isn't there, to lead. We need to think about maybe some people at the workplace or people in your education, even people that you meet, maybe even people in your own family, where it's actually really difficult to lead them. I wonder if you've ever thought about that and wondered, why are they like that for? Why do they do what they do? I know from just being a pastor and listening to people's stories that so very often some of the most difficult people in your life are actually those that you're closest to or maybe that you should be closest to. You know the sting of broken relationship? Someone in your life where things are just not right and you look at other people and how they interact with their family members maybe or their close people in their life and you think, how come we're not like that? Why do they say the stuff they do? You ever wondered why someone has sent you that email or maybe made that phone call or maybe not invited you or when you've turned up it's been an awful experience? And you thought, what's going on here? What's happening in this situation that we're like this? I mean, it's all very well to say, well, we're just going to live alone and we're just going to do our own thing and we're not going to let anyone bother us. But there's very few people in the world that can actually live like that. For most of us, we live in the hub of relationship, don't we? For most of us, relationship is what actually makes us or breaks us. And if we're going to talk about the most times of anguish and pain that we have in life, it's going to be around people and our relationship with them, isn't it? This next couple of months, we're looking at the theme of building up. And we're looking particularly at the story of Nehemiah as the wall was built up around the city of Jerusalem. And last week, we heard the story of how Nehemiah was in captivity and the king came and he went before the king and he had to confront the king and say, look, the wall of Jerusalem is broken. I need to go back and we need to rebuild it. And the king said, well, what do you need in order to do that? And you know what? God had said to Nehemiah to go back and to rebuild the wall around Jerusalem. And this isn't not like a wall that maybe some other people build in the world to keep people out. This wall that they were going to build, that God wanted them to build, was actually a wall which would symbolize God's peace, prosperity, and blessing upon the people. It's a wall that symbolized actually the nation of Israel is back together again. And God is with the people. So it's far more than just a physical wall. It was symbolizing something quite deep and something spiritual. But as I'm reading this story, it strikes me once again how frustrating God is. How annoying God is sometimes. Because God pops this thought into Nehemiah's mind and he says, I need you to go back and rebuild the wall. That's all he says. He doesn't tell him about the years of pains and working hard and not knowing where the next dollar is going to come from, where the next brick is going to come from. He doesn't tell him about all the group of people that he's going to have to muster together. He doesn't tell him where it's all going to come from. I wonder if ever you've had in your life, God has actually shown you something, maybe a frustration, maybe something that he wants you to do. Something he wants you to be involved in. Maybe something that you have a passion for. And he drops that in your mind, in your heart. And I wonder if you've ever said to yourself, you know what, well, I'd love to do that, Lord, but you need to actually show me the next 5, 10, 15 steps and how it's all going to work and that it's going to be a great success at the end. Has God ever done, hands up, if God's ever done that for you? Because I reckon you're the exception. You know? God so very rarely shows us how it's all going to work out, does he? And he so very rarely says this is how it's all going to work. It's frustrating to me that God rarely makes things comfortable for me. And I don't know about you, but it seems to me that I don't think he makes things comfortable for any of us. He drops this thought into Nehemiah's mind. You are to go back and the wall is down and you are to rebuild the wall. But he doesn't tell him really even how he's going to do it. He doesn't tell him where the money's going to come from. He doesn't tell him where the people's going to come from. He just says, you know what? You need to go back and do it. He drops that thought into his mind. Some of you right now this morning, you're thinking actually of a time where God has maybe said, you know what? You need to go and you need to do something. But he hasn't given you the map book for it, nor has he given you the checkbook either. He's just said, go and do it. It seems to me that this journey of life that we're on is as much about us developing as leaders and as people as anything else. And I want to use that word leader. And I want to confront a thought that some of you have right now in your mind, which is, I'm not the boss. I'm not leader. I'm not leading the team. Some of you right now are thinking, you know what, I'm not a leader. You're not talking to me. I'm going to disregard what you say for the next 10 minutes and think about what I'm having for lunch. I want you to stop. Because I want to talk about this principle, which is like 360 degree leadership, which means leading up and leading down. Some of you are in positions of authority and some of you do lead teams. Some of you are head teachers or whatever it happens to be in your profession. Some of you in your home are the mother or the father and you have a position of leadership in your own home. But I want to say, in fact, that all of us in this world, in relationship, nearly all of us actually submit to some form of authority. I do in my role. I have people that keep me accountable. In this church and outside of this church. I'm sure no matter what role we all have, we have people that are in authority over us. What does it look like to be a leader in that sphere? What does it look like for you to actually have influence above, below, and sideways? I actually feel you can. I actually feel you can actually have leadership and show leadership in every sphere and every area of your life. For some of us, and let's talk deeply here for a moment. For some of us, the most difficult people to lead are our own parents. Some of you have parents that are actually really difficult. Some of you have authority figures in your life that are really difficult. And you feel actually trapped. Like there's not much you can actually do about who they are, how they react and what they do to you. You actually feel very stuck. But actually you can lead in that circumstance. You can do what you can do. You can actually have influence. Believe me when I say to every single person in this room, you can actually lead and have influence in so many areas of your life. And the Bible is going to give us some amazing and some wonderful principles along that line. This is what happens in chapter 2 of Nehemiah, verse 11. What does Nehemiah do? Remember, he's just told the king, I'm going to go and I'm going to rebuild the wall. In verse 11, I arrived in Jerusalem 3 days later. I slipped out during the night, taking only a few others with me. This is really interesting, this bit here. I had not told anyone about the plans God had put in my heart for Jerusalem. After dark, I went out through the valley gate, over the dung gate to inspect the broken walls and burnt gates. Then I went to the fountain gate to the king's pool, but my donkey couldn't get through the rubble. Was that important? I have no idea. Though it was still dark, I went up to the Kidron Valley, inspecting the wall before I turned back and entered again at the valley gate. The city officials did not know I'd been out there or what I'd been doing, for I'd not yet said anything to anyone about my plans. Do you pick out what's happening here? Nehemiah has not told anyone what he's on about. He wanted to go out and see what the issue was, to inspect the wall, to see what him and the people were up against before he shared the vision. That's a really good leadership principle there, actually. Sometimes if you can see what needs to happen and you can see what needs to change and if you shared the whole thing with everyone, they would freak out. It reminds me of God. If you could see all the plans that he has for your life and all the difficulties and all the things you're going to have to face, and all the challenges you're going to have to go through, if he showed that to you right now, you would actually freak out and you may not start the journey at all. It takes trust on your part, doesn't it? When God isn't making everything clear. It takes trust in your part to actually keep walking forward, to keep moving forward in faith, even though he hasn't showed you the whole story. Nehemiah was not going to tell them the whole story. He wanted to take an opportunity to go and to inspect those walls, to see what needed to be done, to see the challenge that they're up against before he would actually go and say, you know what, it's time to rebuild the walls. Verse 17. I said to them, you know very well what trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins. Its gates have been destroyed by fire. Let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and end this disgrace. The disgrace was what was actually important here. The name of God, the name of God's people was in disgrace. Then I told them about how the gracious hand of God had been on me and about my conversation with the king. They replied at once, yes, let's rebuild the wall. So they began the good work. The people had been living in the ruins for so long, they hadn't even seen them. I was talking to a friend. We had breakfast on Friday and she was telling me about this church that she's gone into, and she's telling me about how messy the place was and how the children's area in particular was so incredibly filthy that you just couldn't even, the thought of putting a child into that children's area was just, I can't do it. But it's been that way for how long? And it's because, you know, when you're sitting in those squalor and when you're sitting in that environment, you actually sometimes just don't see it. And this is really confronting for me. I'm going to overshare here for a moment, okay, just to make a point. And some of you are going to be going, oh, okay. We've been doing communion for the same way. Take the bread as it comes to you, drink the wine together. We've been doing that for 15 years as a church, I reckon. Recently, someone who's been coming to our church just for a little while came and said to me, and this is a very smart person, they said, you know what? Why do you do that? Why do you do it that way? I'm thinking, well, that's the way we've always done it. I hate those words. That's the way we've always done it. If you know me for 5 minutes, you know that I hate those words. That's the way we've always done it. That's the worst words you can give me. I'm thinking, why do we do it that way? And they said, you know what? I've had visitors and friends come and it's been confusing for me. I'm thinking, you're a smart person and this is confusing for you. I thought it was really clear. I actually thought it was really clear and apparently it's not. So I said, right, we're going to change that. But it was interesting for me to actually be confronted by something that I thought was clear. I actually thought it was clear, and it wasn't. Not because I thought it wasn't, but because someone else had come in with fresh eyes. I wonder what areas there are in your life. I wonder what things are going on in your family, in your workplace, and every other area of your life where if someone came in with fresh eyes, they might say to you, what are you doing stuff that way for? What are you doing it that way? Why is your family operating like this? Why do you do that as a family? Or why do you do that as a workplace? Or what's going on here that you keep doing that? It's actually quite confronting for someone fresh to come in with fresh eyes and see what you don't see. Nehemiah came in and he said, you know what? I can't believe the walls are like this and you're living like this. We need to rebuild these walls. We need to change this. This needs to be changed. It needs to be changed now. I wonder if you're open to be confronted about these things. I wonder if you're open for this word from God this morning, that there are some things in your life and in the lives of people around you, in your workplace, in your home life that actually need to be changed. Stuff that you've actually just can't even see perhaps. I wonder if you're open this morning to that. It's interesting, again, and this is something you should always expect. I don't want to say it, but it's the truth. If you launch out and you start to do things around you in God's will and with God's voice guiding you, then there will be opposition. It's going to happen. Every time it happens in the scriptures, there is opposition. When Sanballat, Tobiah and Geshem, the Arab, heard our plan, they scoffed contemptuously. I detest scoffers. What are you doing? Are you rebelling against the king? I mean, this is, I hate to say this, but I think you actually need to know. What's the device that they're using here? They're scoffing contemptuously first. Let's pick up on that for a moment. If you're trying to do something for God and you're actually branching out, you're trying something new, something fresh, it can be a little bit awkward because no one's ever done it this way before. And people can come along and it can be so easy to be a scoffer and be contemptuous. It's so awful. But people are going to say those things to you. If you stick your head up above the parapet, you stick your head up above the wall and you say, yeah, I believe in Jesus, I'm going to do this for God, I'm going to change the world. People are going to look at you and say, oh, you're an idiot. You can't do that. It's never been done that way before. Who do you think you are? I tell you who I am. I'm a child of God and I've received from God and I'm going to rebuild those walls. The other thing they do there is they say to him, are you going against the king? Are you rebelling against? Was he rebelling against the king? Was there any truth in that? No. The guy had a letter from the king. The king had given him a letter to take back and say, yeah, rebuild the walls. What do you need? Is what King Xerxes had said to him. Was there any truth in what they said? No. Why did they do it? Because they wanted to promote doubt and discord. They wanted to create division. Some of you right now, you're thinking of people in your life and in your workplace, in your home. And I feel it. You're thinking of people that are actually actively trying to create discord and division. You're thinking of people maybe that mock. As the old saying goes, there's no monuments to critics. There's no statues built for critics. As Christians, we're actually meant to sometimes suffer the silence of injustice. There are going to be times where, as a Christian, as a believer, you know, you stick your head up, you try to do something good for God, you try to advance his kingdom, and you feel like you've just been cutting down upon the knees. You ever felt that way? Has anyone ever whispered stuff in people's ears that they shouldn't have and you've caught wind of it? I feel your pain. It's something that happened however many thousands of years ago this book was written. And it's something that happens now and it's happening even in some of your lives. Don't stop. Just recognize that's going to happen. Don't stop hoping. Don't stop believing. Don't stop doing what it is that God's called you to do. Don't discount what God's going to do. Keep going with your faith. Interestingly enough, and it's Nehemiah just says it, the second part of verse 20. You have no share, legal right, or historic claim in Jerusalem. He says it to the critics. Okay. You can criticize. Here's the vision that God's given us. Let's go back. Let's rebuild the walls. You can criticize. You can judge. You can say it's never going to happen. You can sit there and scoff. You can be the two little old fellows and up in the balcony looking down upon those that are doing the stuff and saying, oh, look at that bunch of idiots. You can be that person. That's your choice. But you will have no share in the reward. Whoa. You see, in our church, Inglewood Church, we believe that if you are given responsibility for something, that you say, yeah, you know what, I'm going to do this, I'm going to lead this, I'm going to get involved, I'm going to do something. We believe there's a great reward, actually, for doing that. You become part of a greater story. God is calling you to some things, and he wants you to understand that there's actually a reward for that. There's actually a joy in that. When you get involved, when you get involved in what God is doing, when you hear the voice of God and you say, yeah, I'm going to rebuild the wall, there's actually a reward. But for those who sit on the outside and they scoff and whatever else, there's no reward. They're not part of it. I don't believe any of us are those people. Nehemiah goes on, and chapter 3 of Nehemiah could be such a, it could be one of those, you know, long list of boring names that are in the Bible and we sometimes wonder why they're there. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I actually want to encourage you to read the whole of chapter 3 because it's a very interesting person study into actually the team that is gathered for Nehemiah. The interesting thing about this team of people is he doesn't actually have any choice, really, in who jumps on board. He goes back to Jerusalem. They're going to rebuild the walls around the whole of the city, and everyone is invited. No one is told they have to, but everyone is invited to join into what God is doing in this place. You're invited to join in. No one's made you, but you're invited to join in. And it's interesting, he doesn't get to choose the people. But I think there's a really healthy and helpful filter that I want us to look at for a few moments just to understand some of these people. And I've got a slide that Ben's going to put up for us. And just some words about the people. And maybe you could think about people in your world and in your teams and the people that you're involved with and think about them through these filters: character, competency, and chemistry. You are not always going to get, you don't get to choose the people in your family. You're not going to always get to choose the people that you work with. You're not going to get to choose staff. Not all of us are in a position where we get to hire staff and fire staff and all the rest. So what I'm saying is you may be stuck with some people, but it may actually be helpful just to think about this filter of people. Character. Character will get you a long way. Someone who the yes is a yes, the no is a no. Someone who doesn't lie, doesn't gossip, doesn't steal. Someone who promotes a good unity within the workplace because of the sort of person that they are. Competency. Someone who can actually do the job, no matter what it is around the house or in the family or at work or wherever it is. They can just do the job. They're competent. They have the skills. And then finally, that intangible, the chemistry. You know, when you go up to someone and they might even be really different to you. They might like something that you don't like. They might be into something that you don't like or whatever it happens to be. But you go up to them and you just like them. Chemistry. I think if we have a look at some of these people in Nehemiah chapter 3 and we have a look at the filter of some of these people, we're going to discover some stuff. Look at who rebuilds the walls. The high priest and other priests started to rebuild at the sheep gate. It's exciting, actually, to think that everyone's getting involved. The priests started to rebuild at the sheep gate. What was their competency like? I have no idea. They dedicated it. Well, they knew what they were doing there. They set up its doors, building the wall as far as the Tower of the Hundred. People from the town of Jericho worked next to them. Beyond them was Zaccheus, son of Imri. The fish gate was built by the sons of Hassaniah. They laid the beams, set up its doors, installed its bolts and bars. Next to them was the grandson of Meshezabel and Zadok, son of Bana. Next were the... Well, this is interesting. Verse 5. Next were the people from Tekoa, although their leaders refused to work with the construction supervisors. If you flick over to verse 27, then came the people of Tekoa, who repaired another section across from the great projecting tower and over to the wall of Ophel. That's interesting, isn't it? There was these people and their supervisors wouldn't work with the other people. The bosses wouldn't do it. What's their character like? What's their chemistry like? Well, their competency is there. In this situation, the people that were just the plebs, they said, you know what, we're going to get involved. But the bosses said, we're not going to do nothing. I wonder if you have people like that in your world, in your life. The old city gate repaired. They laid out the beams, set up the doors, installed the bolts and bars. Next to them were the whole heap of other people. This is interesting in verse 8. Next was Uzziel, son of Hariah, a goldsmith by trade. Beyond him was Hananiah, a manufacturer of perfumes. So they're rebuilding a wall. They're getting the bricks, they're getting the wood, they're hammering stuff together. And here we have someone that makes gold and someone that makes perfume. What was their competency like? I don't know. But I think the character was good. I make perfume. That's what I do. I make beautiful perfume for people. I'm not going to rebuild a wall. No, I am. I don't really know what I'm doing, but hand me the hammer. Give me the nails. I make gold for expensive weddings and all the rest. I have no idea how to put this brick on top of this wall. But hand me the mortar. I'm going to get involved. My character is such that if I'm not that competent, I'm going to give it a go anyway. It's just a really useful filter as we look at this story. The story goes on, and I love this in verse 12. His daughters repaired the next section. Shalom and his daughters repaired the next section. You know, even in that patriarchal society, why did the writer highlight the daughters? Because this wasn't a job where you had to be a certain gender, a certain profession, a certain anything. You just needed to say, yeah, I'll have a go. I'll get involved. And I wonder why Nehemiah lists all these names and what they did and who they were. What is it? What possible motivation could he have for having all these names in the book? I think it was because he was the sort of leader that said, you know what? When things are going great, I'm going to say it's all these people's fault. They're the ones that have made things wonderful. When things are going wrong, I'm going to take responsibility. I think he was the sort of leader that actually wanted to highlight the good that everyone else was doing. He lists all their names and he highlights all their professions and all the different type of people that way were. I think he's a wonderful leader. Competent chemistry. Character. The story goes on. Verse 14, the dung gate repaired. I don't know who had to repair the dung gate. I don't think I'd want to be doing that. The fountain gate sounds a lot better to me. He rebuilt it, re-roofed it, set up its doors and installed its bolts and bars. Then he repaired the pool of Siloam near the king's gates. Verse 17, chapter 3. Next to him, repairs were made by a group of Levites working under the supervision. Next down the line were countrymen, verse 18. Next to him was this person, repaired another section of the wall. Verse 22, the next repairs were made by the priests from the surrounding regions. And it goes on and it goes on. Verse 25, Palal, son of Uzai, carried on the work from a point opposite the angle in the tower that projects from the king's upper house beside the court of the gate. I don't know, I actually find this stuff interesting. These are people. Years and years and years ago, that Nehemiah as a leader, he notices them and he notices what they're doing. He knows their names. He knows what they were up to. He knows which part of the wall they repaired. He knew what they did for a job outside of rebuilding the wall. He knew something about their character. But I think the most important thing was that they'd said yes. There were some that said no. There were some that scoffed from the side. There were some that tried to create division. But all these names of all these people and all their backgrounds, they all said yes. I'll get involved. I'll help rebuild the wall. It's a beautiful story. It's a lovely story. Just as the band's coming up, and we're finishing, I actually really feel like I just want us to have a few moments, because I think that as we have looked at this story, for some of you this morning, it's provoked a whole heap of stuff in you. Can we just all bow our heads and just close our eyes? I actually want to take this just in a different direction just here this morning. Spirit of God, right now, will you continue to speak to us? Spirit of God, right now in this moment, will you cause this to be a holy moment for some people? There's some of you here this morning, just as all heads are bowed and all eyes are closed. There's some of you here this morning who God has called upon to get involved. And yet you haven't felt like you were qualified. You haven't felt actually that you are up to the task. You've doubted yourself and doubted that actually you would carry it through. The word from God for you this morning is just to take that first step and not to let the fact that you don't have all those steps laid out before you, don't let that stop you this morning. If you feel like God is calling you to something, just in your heart, right now, I want you to say yes to God. Just say yes. Maybe you need to confess that you've been saying no, and it's time to stop saying no. It's time to put aside the excuses. Spirit of God, I pray and I ask right now you'll help those that are saying yes to sense and know the confidence that you give, the holy confidence. I sense and I know actually that there are people here this morning that have really difficult people in their lives. For some of you here this morning, there are people whose attitude and the words they say, the way they've tried to create division, is really impacting your family. It might be impacting your work life. And I've been praying about what to say this morning. There's something that you need. If you've got really difficult people in your life, you need something from God. It's not actually that the person is removed from your life. It's not actually that the problem is taken away. What you actually need is something that the scriptures tell us you can pray for and in full confidence receive. If that's you, and you have really difficult people in your life, then right now I just want you to posture yourself ready to receive from God, because God is actually going to give you something right now. Just in your heart and in your mind, just say, Lord, I'm ready to receive. Lord God, for those people right now, I want to pray for wisdom, for supernatural discernment, for an understanding of what's actually happening and what they need to say, what they need to do, when they need to keep quiet, when they need to press in. Because in that situation, I know that they can actually lead in that situation. So right now, Lord Jesus, for those that are struggling with difficult people in their lives, I pray for an impartation of wisdom, supernatural discernment upon them right now. In Jesus' name, they receive that right now. Why don't we all stand this morning? Let's stand to our feet. The song we're about to sing, just the last little bit of it, is a song actually of longing. Lord, that you would take down the walls. When's it ever going to change? For those of you who are in difficult situations this morning, won't you sing this believing that God's actually going to, he's going to impart something to you which you didn't even know you had. A strength and a wisdom to face those difficulties. Let's sing this together in Jesus' name.